Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, my friends, to the Sage Equate Radio Hour, your home for free and critical thinking, and I'm your host, Mike Williams. Tonight, columnist Jack Hart returns to the show. Jack's recent article entitled MKUltra, Cybernetic Mutation, Remote-Controlled Slaves, Dragon Soldiers, and a Zombie Empire Painted Blue was recently published on Veterans Today and will also be featured in Nexus Magazine. Painted Blue takes us deep inside the MKUltra rabbit hole, uncovering the true purpose of the covert program, which, contrary to popular opinion, was not only about mind control, but biological research and biological warfare. I highly recommend our listeners read Jack's article in conjunction to listening to the show. It will help to connect the dots. A link to Painted Blue is in the show notes below. Jack's research will be deemed by most to be controversial. However, as many of us know, we need to free-think the esoteric because truth is indeed stranger than fiction. And with that, here's my conversation with Jack Hart. So Jack, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Michael, how you been?
I've been doing okay, and I know I've been awaiting your new article. I know it's I know that you've been working on it for a very long time, and it made its debut on Veterans Today, and it's entitled MKUltra, Cybernetic Mutation, Remote-Controlled Slaves, Dragon Soldiers, and a Zombie Empire Painted Blue. I read the entire article. In fact, I had to read it two or three times because there's a lot of content, and it depicts a very different picture of MKUltra, that MKUltra was not solely a mind control type of program that the CIA was conducting, but that it was about biological research and weapons. If I read the article correctly, there was an Inspector General's report going back into 1963 that described MKUltra.
I think it was 64. I'm not sure, but I believe it goes to 64.
Okay.
Maybe 63. I'm not sure, but I'd have to look at it over again. But first of all, with MKUltra, everybody, they're always talking about it, but nobody really knows anything about it. They're going by that one report, which is all the Church Committee and the Rockefeller had to go on. Later on, there was an answer to the Freedom of Information request. They managed to unearth some 8,000 pages, but they're all financial documentation and stuff. That's why supposedly they went to a different outlet, because they actually were burning these things. They got rid of all of it. I think when Colby was the director, he had ordered all of this stuff destroyed. But these documents were left over. And they got into those. But they don't tell you anything. What you're going by is what the CIA is telling you. And that's the reason I got into the Sims decision and stuff in the article and the Freedom of Information Act, which was actually made, in 1947. It was made to cover their asses. They're only telling you what they want to tell you. And the only researcher that I see that really went beyond what they wanted him to say was this guy McCoy. And he's come under a lot of fire for it, but he's considered the premier expert. He said the same thing, that they're directing the attention to their most ludicrous programs. He thought it had to do with torture, that they were really concentrating on torture. But that's not what they were concentrating on, because I went really deep into this. And what I came up with is this guy Olson was a bacteriologist. He was not involved in the LSD program.
You're talking about Frank Olson?
Yes, I'm talking about Frank Olson. And they're trying to say the reason he jumped out the window, oh, by the way, on the 13th floor in front of Madison Square Garden, I mean, if that don't tell you it's some kind of Masonic message, I don't know what, I give up. But they try to say that they dosed him with LSD and he jumped out the window.
Right.
This is not what happened. A lot of the researchers, when they did go into it, Trace, his movements were going back and forth from a place called Camp King in Germany to Porton Down in England, which may really be the heart of the monster. Fort Detrick may be subservient to Porton Downs, but he was going between the three. At Camp King was a guy named Blom, Kurt Blom. Now, Kurt Blom is probably the most important person in the story. He was a brain scientist, a cancer researcher, for all intents and purposes, one of those people who was out to help humanity. Now, he was educated in the United States partially. And when he went back to Germany, for some reason, he was very fixated on building them a bacteriological warfare program. And this was against Hitler's wishes. Hitler never wanted bacteriological weapons or chemical weapons in the Third Reich. What happened is Himmler issued a decree that overruled Hitler, because Himmler did that sometimes. He said it was okay to use them. So under this decree by Himmler, he had plans to attack the Soviet Union with the bubonic plague, which he was using very effectively against them in limited actions. Now, the Japanese were using it. They were killing thousands and thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of Chinese with the bubonic plague. That should tell you that they were using some kind of vector besides fleas. Bullitt went into researching bacteria. It wasn't really his field of expertise before the war, but he got deeply into it, and he was using it very effectively on the Eastern Front. He was using the bubonic plague. I don't know what vector they were using. It could have been fleas. It could have been mosquitoes, because his guy came over here. He went to a place out in Long Island where they were doing the biological warfare program, and he brought with him Lyme's disease. They were using mosquitoes as vectors.
Who was using mosquitoes? Was it Kurt Blom?
No, it was Kurt Blom, second in command. I would have to look that up, because it's not really in my article. I could write a book on what I left out of this thing.
Yeah, but yeah. But just back up for a second, though, Jack. So what we're saying here is, which I think a lot of people don't realize this, what you're saying is that biological warfare was alive and well and used in World War II.
I really think that the Manhattan Project is nothing but a distraction after doing the research I did. I mean, the real science was in the biological warfare program. You should just think about it. Now, a nuclear weapon creates destruction. The infrastructure where you drop it is destroyed for miles around. The land is uninhabitable. Everybody's dead. You've got radiation. It becomes unlivable. Now, exactly the opposite when you're talking about biological warfare. They insert things called suicide genes into these things, which at a set time, they actually consume themselves, and they're gone. Now, you can use that. You can wipe out everybody in the country, and then you can walk into the country, and the infrastructure is still preserved for you. That's the reason for all the secrecy after war. I think that is the reason the CIA was really formed, was to do this research into this. Now, people have asked me why I named this Painted Blue. First of all, because I love the song, Painted Black, but no. I named it Painted Blue because blue is a tag that they put on the German technology that they took out of World War II.
Oh, okay.
Okay? You can see it in the stuff they do name, like the Have Blue from the stealth technology. That was the first stealth plane they had. Project Bluebird was the name of this thing when it all started. Then it turned to Artichoke, which was more a mind control conditioning thing. And then it turned to MKUltra. But Project Bluebird, there's nothing about it. There's nothing on it. Now, a little bit later, they come up with another thing with the UFOs, Project Blue Book.
Right.
Now we have Project Blue Beam, the Blue Planet Project. All this stuff has to do with aliens and technology that we're not supposed to have and things that are not supposed to exist. And it seems every time one of these things pop up, they stick a blue tag on it. And I believe that's for recognition for agents in the field as to what they're dealing with, you know. They don't have to come right out and say it. It's blue. You know, this is blue. That's why I named it Bluebird. Now, what was I answering now? I wanted to tell you about that blue, because I keep going into that with my editor where this is being published in Nexus. Yeah, she's like, why is it named Bluebird? Because I didn't get into the blue part yet, you know.
Well, let me ask this question, Jack. So a lot of people believe MK Ultra is just this mind control thing. But going
right.
back to what we were talking about earlier about that Inspector General's report back in 1964, that report described MKUltra as materials capable of employment in clandestine operations to control human behavior. That included biological research and
radiological weapons, which were completely missing from the Senate and from the Senate hearings.
Right.
That they say nothing about that. And you will see at the end of the Senate hearings, if you look at the notes from them, what's up on the internet, which I've used as a source to write the first part, they mention that it's just completely left out. Nobody went into this. What they were doing is using neutron radiation to mutate bacteria. I think that's going to link up eventually with what they were doing in the pyramids, which is how I began this whole thing, with the pyramids and with the AEC, the Atomic Energy Commission, running experiments in the pyramids that were never really fully explained. Under Dr. Alvarez, who was the top scientist, nuclear scientist we
right.
ever had, you know, for real, not made-for-TV ones like Einstein and stuff. Alvarez was the real thing. And he was the one running that project. And what they were doing in that pyramid, they say they were examining it for hidden chambers with cosmic rays, but I have my doubts about that. They supposedly, one of the scientists that worked on it, by the way, almost all the scientists were all different fields, only one archaeologist among them. So, you know, if you're looking for hidden chambers, you would think these team of scientists would be little archaeologists. They weren't. This one guy, he was an Egyptian scientist, and he spilled the beans, and he said that there's an intelligence in the pyramid that permeates the pyramid that defies all laws of physics. Alvarez had a fit when he said this, and he accused the British newspaper that published it of making it all up, actually. You know, like you're lying, and that's what he had to say about it. What they were doing, from you know, we can now piece it together with their Council of Nine and stuff, is they had made contact with an intelligence, a disembodied intelligence, and they were getting directions from this intelligence, which is exactly the way the Germans cultivated their technology.
Right. The Thule Society, right? With
yes.
the Germans, yes.
Right. Now, what this intelligence had them do is. I don't think it was very desirable for the human race, and they should have stopped a long time ago, but they haven't. They haven't. Instead, they've accelerated the program. What you see now, I'll come into this in part two.
Didn't Aleister Crowley also in the pyramid?
Aleister Crowley is the beginning of this whole thing.
Okay.
I have to get into that. I'm going to say it right here on the radio. You know, I've talked to a few of these people. I've talked to West, or communicated with West. You know, he wrote the first book. So where is he? He's located right over there by Sulphur Island, where Crowley performed the Avalanche workings. That's no coincidence, you know. When I said that to him, he stopped writing me. I've talked to a few of the others, too, that are very big in this. You know, I've also talked extensively with...
And this was John Anthony West?
Yes.
Okay.
With Dr. Colette Dow on the telephone. And,
okay.
She's the one who does all of Dr. Schott's research for him. And she told me a lot of things. But unfortunately, I did sign a non-disclosure form for that. But I can tell you this, it's not what people think it is. It's not, you know?
Yeah.
All this stuff about aliens.
You mean it's not a Pharaoh's tomb?
No, I mean it's not about spacemen either.
So the pyramids are a lot more than maybe even folks that know that it's a lot more can even imagine.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's where we begin with this whole thing.
So Jack, your article puts a lot of focus on Henry Puharich and Jose
okay.
Delgado. Who were these guys?
All right, Puharich is probably the most important character in the story. We're going to get I'll get back to him when I wrap it up. What he did, he wrote a paper. He was a kid. I mean, the Army put him all through college, the best colleges, one of the best colleges. And he wrote a paper before he had even graduated. The paper was called The Theory of Nerve Conduction. And it said that neuron units radiate and receive waves of energy in the ultra-short wave bands. That's below infrared and above the radar spectrum. What they're talking about is what's called the Paschen series. Now, Paschen was a German scientist that he was around even before the turn of the 20th century. He was did a lot of his work in the 1890s, where he discovered the Paschen series, which is exactly what these ultra shortwave bands below the infrared spectrum. That's what the Paschen series is. The Germans continued on from there. I mean, by 1900, they knew all about this. So we were 50 years behind them. And anyway, when he wrote this paper, The Theory of Nerve Conduction, it turned science, American or American and English science, more or less on its ear. Now, Delgado was a scientist, a European scientist. He was from Spain, and he had a fellowship at Yale. He read this paper, and he became completely enamored with the idea. And he went into it big time. And 5 years later, he would start publishing, I guess after he had done the proper amount of study on it and everything else, he would start publishing papers on that. He ended up publishing something like 134 papers. Now, the only real book that's ever been written about MKUltra, The Mind Manipulators, Delgado figures prominently as the lead technical scientist. He was... I would say he's more of a distraction than really the lead scientist, because he did things like have a bull charge him in the center of a bullfighting ring in Spain, and he would stand there with this stimulus, what he called a stimulus EVA. He had implanted something in the bull's brain, and he would calmly let the bull charge him, and he'd press a button, the bull would stop in mid-charge and just walk around in circles like it. It didn't know what it was doing.
Right.
He wrote books. Check the title out on this one. Physical Control of the Mind Towards a Psycho-Civilized Society. This guy wanted to turn everybody into a robot, and he thought this would be a great idea. And he thought that he would reduce crime. I've read some of the stuff he writes, and he's really an appalling person.
And this is Delgado?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Yes, Dr. Delgado. But he was not the lead scientist. Buharic was the lead scientist. Buharic has worked from the shadows almost till the day he died. You can find him at the bottom of everything. Whenever you look deeply enough and turn enough over enough rocks, Buharic will be on the bottom of the rock. He walked out on them, too. He walked out on them sometimes in the 80s. They burned down his mansion. He had a mansion that he was performing all these experiments on. You see it like if you watch Matrix, where the woman, the psychic, has all the kids in her living room and she's training them. He really had something like that. They had flown in kids from all over the world with psychic abilities. They called it the Turkey Farm. And these kids were trained, hypnotized. He was trying to get to the source of their powers. He had all the technology, because I went into this in my previous publication before this one, about how the CIA had really, or it wasn't the CIA then, but it was the intelligence services, really had made a split with what I call the empire, which is the Anglo-American empire. They had walked away. They had taken all their toys and they had went to a place called Glen Cove in Maine. And they had founded something called the Round Table Society. And they had all the technology they had. Crazy stuff. I mean, Huxley, who was Aldous Huxley, was considered like maybe the most influential writer of the 20th century. He was always there, and I included like a description from him of what they were doing there. They had done all this experimentation there. Suddenly, his mansion just burned down. The other guy, his literary publicist, or the guy who was like the face for the whole thing. He got accused of murdering his girlfriend. Well, he probably did. They found her dead in his closet and decayed in a trunk. She had disappeared after, Einhorn was his name. She had disappeared after having a fight with him, and they were looking for her for a year or so. They finally found her in the closet. Supposedly the CIA and Paharic had blocked any police investigations up until then.
You know, what's interesting about this, though, is the fact that there is these factions. So what you're describing,
right? That's exactly what's interesting about it, Michael. These people are not really like a lot of stuff I read on the internet. When I hear this good evil stuff, and like human beings can be either good or evil, that's such nonsense. We're all individuals. We are all duality. There's good and bad in all of us. Nobody's totally evil. Nobody's totally good. You know, Jesus Christ never lived, okay? He's a figment of people's imagination. There is no good angelic being floating around. You know, people have a dark side and they have a light side. And just like everyone else, these people struggle. They have internal struggles with each other and with themselves, too. This guy Poharis came clean with a lot of stuff later on in life. He made some tapes, and one has recently been made available on the internet. I would advise anybody to listen to what this man is saying. The guy had 50-something patents, medical patents, before he died. Most of them had to do with hearing. Bell Lab had sent somebody over. He had invented a new hearing aid. And they tested the hearing aid with somebody who was essentially deaf, you know. And the guy was hearing perfectly fine. And the Bell Lab scientist said to him, Poharis, this is not science. This is magic. He had actually crossed the borderline, and he was dealing with souls at one point. And he was using it to transmit actual audio signals.
So back up a second. So when you say he was utilizing souls, what do you mean by that? What was he doing?
He was utilizing what doesn't exist, what the Michelson morally experiment tells us doesn't exist. He was utilizing the A2O.
Okay. All right.
He was utilizing things that are not seen and not tangible, that take place, like I said, below the senses of man, what we're talking about with infrared, ultra shortwave bands, infrared, below the radar spectrum, stuff like that.
So he was tapping into stuff that was similar to what Tesla was working with.
Same thing, almost.
Okay.
Tesla is his hero. He was the heir of Tesla's scientific papers. As a matter of fact, when he had actually gotten some of the papers back, I think it was for Tesla's son that was supposedly, you know, destroyed after Tesla, he had given some back. But he had gotten all that documentation. That documentation that disappeared, that when Tesla died, it all went to Poharis. Okay, and he's the next. Most people have never heard of him. That's a shame, you know, because he's the next step after Tulsa. Because they didn't stop after Tulsa. They kept going.
Yeah.
Well, Tulsa was doing work. You know, it was real, unlike the nonsense science that they have on TV with this guy Tyson and the other idiot, Morgan Freeman, who's a Hollywood actor. These sciences have done nothing for us. It amazes me that people swallow this. What have these sciences done for us? They've increased our work week to something like 60 hours. We have no time to enjoy ourselves anymore. I mean, people had it way better before the Roman Empire fell than we have it. As a matter of fact, the Romans had toilets. You know, we didn't have them until a couple hundred years ago when the French reinvented them. What have these scientists, what has industrialization done for anybody? They have not improved anybody's life one iota. That's not a science. These are fairy tales they're telling people. They don't do anything. And I know you're heavily involved with like this criticism of NASA with these rockets. Where are these rockets going? They're shooting rockets into space. This is a show. That's not what NASA is about. NASA was founded by the great-great-grandson of a master cablist named the Mario of Prague. And his partner was Jack Parsons,
right.
Aleister Crowley's best pupil and his representative in America, because England would not let Crowley was under house arrest for his last years of his life. Parsons did everything for Crowley in America. He wanted to come to America. He never could get here. They wouldn't let him out of England. These guys were not scientists per se. They were magicians.
They were magicians.
NASA is not a scientific organization. It is a religious group. As a matter of fact, it's probably one of the highest levels of masonry you can go. They're in contact with disembodied entities.
Well, it's definitely a Masonic organization. There's no doubt about it.
They're above the Freemasons. They're above.
Yeah.
They're like the NSA. They're one of the entities. There's like 20 or 30 entities that control this world. And NASA is one of them, you know?
Yeah.
But this crap they're feeding people, what has any of this done for us? People got to start asking, how does this improve my life? They sit there and they spent, what did they spend? A few $1 trillion already? Of our money. It's not their money, it's our money. We worked for this money. What has it done for us? It's done nothing.
Yeah, well, they're stealing our money, and then they put on cartoons for us to watch, like somebody doing a backflip in a supposed International Space Station and nonsense like that. And people are enamored with that, Jack. It's just that people live in a cartoon world, and they love living in the cartoon world. So what they give them cartoons to watch, and most people are fat, dumb, and happy by watching cartoons. And in the meantime, like you said, they're off taking all the money they've stolen, doing the thing.
I'm
going to
tell
do.
You in the meantime what's happened, Michael. It's in part two. In the meantime, what's happened is they've infected 80% of the world with something called Mycobacterium tuberculosis. It's latent right now. But given the right catalyst, which is that's what they call something that makes something react, it can turn into what's called galloping tuberculosis. It should be military tuberculosis, but they took the T out so it would confuse idiots. You know, but it's military tuberculosis, which used to be galloping tuberculosis, which they now call Ebola. And these people, which happen to be all Asians and blacks from poor countries, will all bleed out through every orifice of their body and die horribly. That's why they're not worried about that Caucasians, I hate to use the word Caucasian, but Caucasians are not bleeding enough, or they're being outbred by different races, because they know they're going to kill these other races when the time comes. Yeah. And they've got them. They've got 80% of them already infected with this stuff. And you got about a day to live once malaria tuberculosis is activated, and the death is horrible, as we all know from what they've told us about Ebola, because that is malaria tuberculosis. A guy named Dr. Boxmeyer was on Nexus and VT, and he started to postulate this thing. Well, we went a little further and we did the research. I think people will be shocked when they read part two. They're going to find out things about Marbury and the way they name things. They think they're funny sometimes, I swear to God, with the, like I said, with the blue stuff and calling something Marbury. Wait till you find out Marbury. Wait till you find out where they got that from. That was the first release of this stuff, and it came from Camp King. It's tuberculosis. It's not a virus. I have my doubts that viruses even exist after studying this. Most people don't understand. A virus is not considered a life form. It has genetic blueprints in it, but it's not an actual life form. It has no cell wall, but that's the way bacteria reproduce and spread themselves. There's something called L-form bacteria. That is bacteria without a cell wall. All of this stuff was discovered after the Germans invented the electron microscope. After that, a woman named Anne Kleinman, I think it was, or Nobel was her last name, but she fled Germany. She was Jewish. She fled Germany in like the early 30s when the National Socialists took control. And she got set up by the American Association of Universities for Women. So I'll talk about them in a little while, the AAU. But in any case, she discovered L-form bacteria. She labeled it and showed how it exists, under the electron microscope. And after that, now we had the menagerie of what they could, the viruses, the mycoplasma. That's when it all came out, after she discovered L-form bacteria. And now they've been working on this stuff. If you go through the internet, like in my research, I can find out all I want about stuff like Bacillus subtilis, Serratia marcescens. You won't find anything about tuberculosis. Oh, nobody was working on tuberculosis in these bacteriological programs. Right. All of that has been eliminated. And at Fort Detrick, I think they burned all the records from 44 to like the mid-50s. They're very careful about covering their tracks. They burn everything. And what they don't burn, when it's in somebody's head, they kill them. You want to verify that, you can just look at the death totals on microbiologists. I mean, they die very suddenly all the time, especially in Great Britain, where Porton Down is located, which I feel is really the heart of the monster.
Well, that's what happened with Frank Olson, right? I mean, Frank Olson was a...
Right, we got sidetracked.
That's okay. No. You talked about that's what happens to biologists, and many people who are looking into MK Ultra, they know the story, well, they think they know the story about Frank Olson. But Olson... they kind of made him out to be this guy that was involved in LSD experimentation by the CIA, and then he jumped out of a 13-story window.
He's one of the few good guys in the story.
But he was much more than just a guy that was...
He had a strong moral compass.
Yeah.
He was the senior bacteriologist in the program. He was going back and forth, like I was saying, from Fort Detrick to Portland Downs to this Camp King and communicating with this guy, Ball. And he was carrying diplomatic pouches, too. I think Annie Jacobson writes about it in her new book. I think it's on the New York Times bestseller list. But he was carrying, she insinuates, but he was carrying pouches back and forth of these bacterias. Now, they were testing it out on people who were captured by the German intelligence. The newly found German intelligence, which was really the old Nazis. What he saw over at Camp King, what they were doing. My impression is what he saw is probably something like you see in John Carpenter's The Thing, where the little strings come out, like Magellan's on steroids.
Yeah.
Where the little strings come out of the human and start grabbing at things. I think that's what they were doing to these guys. He went there and he'd seen all this and he participated in it. And before that, he had complained to the big-time British psychologist. This psychiatrist happened to also be an MI6 operative. He went to his superiors, of course, and he said, this guy's a security risk.
Yeah.
But they couldn't really get rid of him at the time, so they continued on as is. So he goes to Germany, and who knows? God only knows what they were doing to these Soviets that they were capturing. But he had seen that. And then he came back to England, and he's like, I can't do this anymore. He went back to this psychologist. Well, let me just get his name. It's hard for me to remember all the names.
Yeah, okay, take your time.
Dr. Sargent. But in any case, he went back to Sargent, and he tells him, I can't do this anymore. He wanted out. He wanted out of the he wanted out of the CIA, and he wanted out of the MKUltra program. And he was deeply disturbed. Even when he came back to America, his friends talked about it. All of a sudden, you know, they gave him LSD, supposedly, and he was still acting really funny when he came down. And they took him to see this guy, Abramson. He worked for them. He worked out of Aberdeen Proving Grounds. He was a pediatrician and an allergist. And the guy was having severe psychological. They took him to see this guy.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But in any case, 2 o'clock in the morning, the guy takes a fall out that window. And he splats on the pavement below. 13 floors. You know, it just the whole thing screams a Masonic message, you know,
yeah.
To anybody else who wanted to get out of the program. This is how you leave, you know, right through the window. In any case, they've made him out to be now like some kind of nut. But he was deeply disturbed by LSD. I have my doubts that they even dosed this guy with LSD, or they might have because they were getting rid of him. But why would you dose your senior bacteriologist with an hallucinogenic? They apparently threw him out the window because an autopsy was done, and they found none of these stuff. The CIA buries him in a closed casket, says he's all torn. His face was all torn up from jumping through the window. And they opened up the coffin. The guy didn't have a scratch on his face.
Yeah.
What he found was a contusion that he said was made with a hammer. And he thought the same hammer was probably used to break the window. And actually, when they ran up there, when the guy hit the pavement, I guess the hotel manager ran up there and said, "Hey, your friend's outside, dead." Lashbrook picked up the phone, dialed the number, and he says, "Olson's gone." This is the testimonial witness of the manager. "Olson is gone." Then he hangs up, and he goes in the bathroom, sits on the toilet, and puts his head in his hands. Then he attends the funeral. He never even tells Olson's family that he was in the room. They never knew this until all this came out later on.
His family had him exhumed, right?
Yes. Eric's son had him exhumed. He waited till the mother died, then he had him exhumed. I think it was in 1994. Then he had the body exhumed, and the autopsy was done. And really, if it wasn't the CIA, there would have been indictments, but there wasn't. You know.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, as we're talking about Frank Olson, in your article, you mentioned that there were 33. Here's another Masonic number for you.
Thank you, Michael. Very good. Very good. 33 appears over and over again throughout the narrative.
Yeah.
It's like the number 9 when they tell you the history of the Templars. It keeps coming up over and over again. Now, whether that's through the intervention of disembodied entities and that's the, you know, it's actually, it seems almost, it couldn't possibly be through human manipulation. It's so perfect. I mean, Gottlieb goes and he at 33, that's when he joined the TSS. just goes on and on. 33 keeps coming up. And
yes,
you know,
they love the number 33. They love 33.
Yes.
They love 11. They love 13. But in your article, it says that there were 33 sub-projects under MKUltra, and there were 80 institutions, including 40 colleges and universities, pharmaceutical companies, and hospitals involved with the program. Now, when I read this, this was a pretty amazing revelation, because it says that the program was very extensive and the coordination was extremely precise, right?
Extremely precise is even an understatement. This was went to the highest echelons of learning, so to say, which is the Association of American Universities, the AAU. It's some 60 colleges, the most elite colleges in America. It was started in 1900, the same time as, by the way, the only member, the Rockefeller's little college was started. The AAU included Yale, Harvard, there's a bunch of them. There's the one in Pittsburgh where they did the Michelin-Morley experiment, so to say. By the way, for people listening to this, that experiment took place in the basement. I'd like to know if it's ever been replicated. That's what I'd like to know. Has it been replicated in a lab? Experiments in somebody's basement, I don't think I can count those, you know?
You're talking about the Morley Michelson experiment?
Yeah.
You know, what I wanted to mention also, we're talking about all these institutions and these hospitals and these pharmaceutical companies being involved. George Merck was involved in establishing a biological weapons program for America.
Right.
Is that right?
Right. The Germans and the Americans were in bed together up to their necks. I don't even know why they had two wars. I really don't. Because they were working on this stuff. They were working on it at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
He was, for all intents and purposes, the guy's a German. I mean, that the company that he came from, this was probably the biggest chemical company in Germany. And he came over here to form the American wing of it on Wall Street. And he's the one who really set this whole thing in motion. Merck KGaA. That's like the biggest chemical freaking company in Europe. You know, and it has been for the last 100 years. But he came over here and he went to school, I think it was at Harvard, and he was heavily involved in a biological weapons program. This was sometime in the early 40s. I don't think it was really operative until after the war. I think Blohm added the missing ingredients, which was neutron radiation. Because they mutate these things, they use UV lights.
So they're mutating the bacteria, Jack?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, bacteria mutates itself. It adjusts on the fly.
Okay.
But the mutation rates can be accelerated by adding UV lights. And they were doing this even before nuclear fission was invented. This bacteria has been around for a very long time. It's known as the blood of Christ because, you know, whenever they had a little problem, the priest would rip this stuff out. It grows on the host. It secretes prolifically. So blood would actually, or this blood red substance, which is called protogesin, this is how it communicates, would actually drip off the hosts. And this is where they came up with this crazy cannibalistic doctrine that was the Pope Innocent III tried to institute it. And for 50 years, the Catholic Church, to their credit, fought it. They knew it was crazy. But after they started using this stuff, that's when they come in with this is the body and blood of Jesus Christ. There's some 30 different incidents or somewhere around there listed of where the host actually bled. And scientists have traced this back to Serratia Moss Essence. And I know almost for certain that the church was very well aware of this. And they were growing it on the host. And when people sit at that rail and stick their tongue out, the priest was sticking the freaking mind-control bacteria into their mouths. That's what was happening. This bacteria was used before that by Alexander the Great when he conquered Tyre, when his troops were demoralized. They broke this bread, and the bread supposedly bled, and they all ate it, and they thought it was a great omen, and they attacked, and the city finally fell. But Alexander the Great's mother was a Scythian, and the Scythians are the Ashkenazi. She was a sorceress, and it's my belief, I can't prove this, but you know, sometimes we have to jump conclusions, if you talk, that it came from there. The Cabalists have been playing with these bacterias for at least 1,000 years. The Golem, which is what the Mario of Prague created is made from the clay on a riverbank, red clay, mind you, which is what ceriasium moss essence is. And it's an entity that supposedly knows certain secrets of the universe, which it can communicate to its creator, and it will serve its creator. Now, this golem was stored up in Austria, in the main synagogue. It was up in the attic. All kinds of educated people knew this thing was up there. They seen it. The Germans knew it existed. The Germans were very interested in getting a hold of it. And around the turn of the 20th century, it just disappeared out of there.
So, Jack, hold on a second. Are you saying, though, that – let me make sure I understand this. Are you saying that these plagues like the Black Death or the bubonic plague was
– were engineered, yes.
All engineered.
These things can be engineered in the freaking brewery, Michael.
Because if you go on – the mainstream explanation is that it circulates among wild rodents.
Right. This is ridiculous. Any honest doctor will tell you that flea of a rat as the vector could have never, ever spread bubonic plague at the rate it was spread during the 14th century. It couldn't have happened 15th and 16th century. It's impossible. They were using some other kind of vector, which is where the Bacillus subtilis comes in. Well, I'll get into a little bit of the science here. Now, Ceriasium moss essence is a gram-negative bacteria, okay? Gram-negative bacteria can't do what they call sporulation. Sporulation is where it kind of collapses on itself. It splits up inside the cell wall. Then one of the divisions eats the other one or consumes it, absorbs it. And then it hardens into a singular mass. Its biological functions slow down to 10 million times what they were. But it's carrying all the genetic material it needs. It's actually aware enough to know when it gets back into an environment, it reactivates itself. Now, gram-positive bacteria can sporulate. The world champion of sporulation is Bacillus subtilis. Now, that was what the Americans were using.
So this is all coming in, maybe I shouldn't say all of it, but a lot of this is coming in from Germany?
Oh, yeah, just about all of it came in from Germany. I'll tell you, Michael, 2.5 years ago when I don't even know when I wrote the first Black Sun Rising. It's all been a blur. The Germans were so far. We're freaking cavemen compared to their sciences. You can hand almost the whole industrial age to them. We have nothing without them. They invented everything. Everything. They were so far ahead of us, it's pathetic. And that's because they never accepted the ether didn't exist. And they were working from that. Electron microscopes, nuclear fission, cell phone communication, all of it came from Germany, from Germany.
Well, plus the Germans were very much into the esoteric aspects of existence and mysticism.
That's because there's no line between science and magic with a K. The only line is the artificial one created by paid shills, like Morgan Freeman, who, I can't say he's a Hollywood actor enough times, and Tyson, I don't know what he is. That guy is dumber than a stone. I don't know what he's doing on TV.
It goes back to what I said before, Jack. This is the veneer. These are characters that are put in front of the masses because it's a cartoon world. So that's all it is. And, you know, the reason
the cartoon is going to kill us all.
I know.
Okay?
Yep.
They've rigged it up so they've inserted a suicide gene into the bulk of humanity. When they get tired of us useless eaters, and we are fucking useless, excuse my language, and we are useless eaters right now. We don't do anything anymore. We don't create anything. We don't produce anything. We sit around and we moan about our government not giving us enough. Who needs us? They're going to decide to get rid of us one day. And that day is coming very soon. So this cartoon, while you were watching the pretty little firework display that NASA was putting on, this is what they were really doing.
Yep.
Okay? This is what they were really doing. And they've got the whole world just set up to do whatever they want. And now we can get into what these bacteria really do, which is splice DNA. That's what Ceriasium moss essence does. It releases an enzyme that actually can splice and consume DNA and RNA. They use it now. There's two different kinds. Bacillus subtilis also releases this enzyme. One is two and the other one's one. The one that Bacillus subtilis releases is a little more advanced. Now, these enzymes are now being used to cure cancer. They can actually engineer T cells that will attack the cancer. They can cure cancer anytime they want, by the way.
Yeah, oh, there's no doubt, right.
Anytime they want, Michael. They have about 10 different cures for it, you know? Blom said, now Blom, we talked about Blom. He was a cancer research expert. Blom had probably discovered the cure for cancer back in 1944, you know? And we have a million people. How many people die of that a year just in America? They can cure it anytime they want.
Yeah, well, it's a big money-making scheme now with chemotherapy and radiology and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It really is.
It's a whole economy is based on it.
Exactly.
That's the problem with capitalism. We stop inventing things that are useful and instead invent things to make more money for ourselves. And we'll do anything to keep that commerce flowing. You know,
well,
to the point of squashing other inventions that are better for the same purpose. That's why we're still driving the same automobile for the last 100 years. We're still blowing things up to create energy. You know, because they make plenty of money off of that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They like it just as it is, and you're not going to get anything else.
Well, that's the that was the undoing of Nikola Tesla, right? When J.P. Morgan pulled the plug on the funding because the whole apparatus, the commerce apparatus that was in place at the time, Edison's electricity and so on, would have just caved, and that would have been that. So they couldn't have that because they're very wealthy, very affluent elites. At the top of the pyramid, they're making a bundle of money off the slaves.
We should call them parasites instead of elites.
Well, right. Yeah, no, right. Better description. But my point being is the reason why nothing's changing, and your comment about the automobile is spot on. I mean, essentially, today's cars are using the same technology as the Model T Ford.
Right. And you know what, Michael? If we live another, if the human race exists for another 100 years, there still will be too. If we leave things as is with our current political system.
Yeah.
Because right now it's the sheikle that rules the world, and the human race was not meant to live that way. You can really trace this whole thing back to that. I mean, these people, all they're worried about is their own cut of the pie. People, altruists like Nikolai Tesla. Like the German scientist Schauberger, they get plowed under, you know, and their inventions get stolen and they get used for nefarious purposes.
Right.
That technology wasn't squashed. It was just closeted. It was closeted, and you're not allowed to see it. You know, people aren't seeing UFOs because they're hallucinating, and there's no little green men that are coming to save the world either. But they are seeing something. Millions of people are seeing something every year. What they're seeing is the damn technology that they're using for themselves.
Right.
You know? They've had anti-gravity technology for 70 years, for Christ's sakes. Enough with the nonsense. You go back through my writings, you can trace where it was invented and how it works. I don't understand why – well, I do understand because I believe it's a technology. Why people do not wake the hell up.
They don't wake up. Jack, because they really are programmed and they've been indoctrinated since the day they got out of the womb. And I had a conversation yesterday with another guest, and we were talking about NASA, and we were talking about, you know, the little sideshow they put on with their rockets and the moon landings and everything else. And the
look
question
at the pretty fireworks. It's like a like the human race is a bunch of 6-year-olds, you know? And like you said one time, how come the rocket's going sideways every time I see it? You
know? Yeah, it's supposed to be
that thing looks like it's going to land in the ocean to me. I mean, call me stupid.
Well, that's exactly where they're going.
I know it is. Yeah. I know it is.
And so the question always comes up, like, well, why do they do this? Well, they do this because by putting on their little cartoon show, they receive funding. Then they take that funding and then they're plowing it into the stuff that you're talking about.
And don't forget the drug dealing. The drug dealing has gotten
and drugs too. And right. And weapons, right.
I mean, what were these guys in the CIA doing? I mean, when you see someone, when you see your fellow, I mean, a lot of cops wouldn't let they're not going to let their fellow cops steal drugs. Why didn't other guys in the CIA step in and stop this? I don't understand this.
Yeah.
I really don't. And it still can be stopped. They need to stop it. They need to stop with the goddamn drug dealing. Because that's what we know. Afghanistan is only for one reason. That was to open up an opium pipeline.
That's
and
right.
And when the VODs increased four times now since we've been in the, four times what they were, you know, how many people are going to die? And how much destruction are they going to create before somebody says, somebody steps up? Because you know what? Yeah, they'll kill you if you do. So what? So what?
You're going anyway under their
plan. That's right. Nobody gets, like Jim Morrison said, nobody gets out of here alive anyway.
Right.
You know? And from what I've learned, our lifespans are truncated. I think it's like, it's probably the human lifespan is meant to be probably 1,000 years. I mean, from the second we reach our maturity and the height of our physical, we start deteriorating. That goes against the laws of nature to me. Human babies, they can't even walk for the first couple of years of their lives. That speaks to of a very, very long lifespan to me. Some woman named Lana Cantrell wrote the greatest story never told. I recommended it the very first thing I ever read. She goes through the science, the medical science about, you know, the shortage of copper in the human bloodstream. And that medically, you can make a very strong case that the human being should be living to be close to 1,000 years old.
Well, I think you're right. I think our lifespans are definitely truncated. I will agree with that. I mean, I don't know, you know, how long is long, but I personally
bacteria,
a lot
Michael,
longer than 60, 70, or 80 years.
This bacteria controls us.
Yeah.
We are not number one on the food chain.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, because in your article you said that you depict these pathogens as taking over the body and the functioning of a host. Did you want to talk about that a little bit? Because I think that's
where it's going, right?
That's
exactly where it's going. That's where we get the zombie empire from.
Yeah.
We are going to. This is why Paharich walked away from. That's why I recommended people listen to some of the tapes they left on the internet. It is.
He left the reservation. Yeah. In other words, he walked away from this work.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
When you start messing with the free will of the human race, I mean, what sense is there to even exist anymore? Are we all going to be automatons? Why don't we just end it then? Because we're not really. It's not a life. And he was one of the. He said that, you know, that was enough. That was enough. When you start trying to take away the free will of the human race, then I can't. Don't count me among your allies. And he walked away.
Yeah.
He walked away and he patented, which I think it was Schauberger's patent, in 83 or 84, converting water into hydrogen, splitting the molecules, just making hydrogen molecules for energy. They got really mad at him. I hear you had a big fallout with the Rockefellers with that, and the other ones are from Canada. And, you know, for a while he was a wanted man. But I think the Germans picked him up, from what I understand. Well, he actually does say that, but he says he didn't. He says that Germany is still very well alive and well, and he says where they are, and that they're very interested in his work. And I think they were protecting him.
But Jack, when we talk about that the population is infected with these pathogens, I just want to say one thing. I want to preface what I'm going to say by saying that in your article, you said that there were covert tests performed by the military to test the effect of these pathogens on an unknowing population going back 60 years ago or so, right?
70 even.
70, okay. And then a number that you had in the article I quoted here was that these tests were done 239 times in 8 American cities as of 1966.
And Nixon tried to put an end to it, and they paid that man no attention, you know?
Yeah.
He said that he wanted unequivocally halted by 68 or 69.
So what were they doing? Were they spraying?
Okay. First of all, it started after I got sidetracked with when they went over and they had Boehm operating out of Camp King. He had recommended to them, they were using Bacillus subtilis. He had recommended they use Sarastrium arcescens.
Mm-hmm.
They first sprayed it on, believe it or not, and you're the one who supplied me with the link. That was that link you had, that military link of
yes.
them spraying San Francisco.
Yep.
And they were lamenting that they have a primitive, they want a better spray mechanism to affect more people. They infected some 800,000 people from San Francisco in 1950. It was called Operation Sea Spray. and they sprayed them all with Serratia moss essence. 11 of them ended up almost dead in Stanford University Hospital. Where else? I wonder how they got there. They actually bragged about they infected 800,000 people, and they considered this a very successful experiment. And from there, they went on with the I list them all. There's too many different ones to list. They were spraying. It's like something out of a comic book.
Yeah.
They actually had a bus rig to spray it out of the gas tank. They're driving it around Washington, D.C., New York City. They had some kind of hot rod Chevy with a. They filmed this all while they were doing it. And they rigged spray tanks up, driving it up and down the street, spraying people with these pathogens. After that, they're feeding it. They're feeding it with what they were calling fluorescent tracer particles. Now, what this really was it was their first, so to say, heavy metals and stuff. And it also had a cancer-inducing agent in it. Let me just get it so
Yeah,
get this right. Oh, zinc cadmium sulfide. They were calling it fluorescent tracer particles. But what they were doing is lacing the atmosphere with metals. Serratia moss essence has all kinds of secretions that utilize metal. They actually have ones that go into your bloodstream and scavenge the iron right out of your blood cells. There's the other ones with the Pseudomonas. They release something called acetophor, which is it's the strongest soluble iron scavenging agent known to man. And they scavenge it out of the soils. They were spraying this stuff. They were feeding it is what they were doing. This did not only take place in America. It took place in England. England was even worse. I think they had 100 incidents in a few years where the MOD actually attacked British citizens, spraying millions of people, millions of people. They sprayed them first with the bacteria, then they sprayed them with the fluorescent tracer particles, as if they were like planting a seed and then they were watering it, which is exactly what they were doing. This was food. They're saying they were using it as markers. I mean, they're just ridiculous statements they made. Markers they were going to use anthrax. They had anthrax weaponized in the 1944. I think they had 5 million cattle cakes of anthrax ready to drop on Germany. Of course, they weren't going to do that because the Germans had the bubonic plague, and they had estimated they would wipe out 30% of Germany's beef supply. Germany would have used the bubonic plague in retaliation and wiped out 30% of our people, you know?
Right.
Never mind the beef supply. So they never did it. They ate their 5 million cattle cakes laced with anthrax. But anthrax is not the weapon of choice. The weapon of choice that was actually the bubonic plague, which I believe has been the weapon of choice for the last 1,000 years, or at least since the 700. It's called horizontal gene transfer, and many of the ways in which they mutate it can be accomplished in a freaking brewery. You don't need high-tech stuff to do it, and that's exactly what they were doing. That's what I think a lot of what you see in alchemical treaties and stuff is how to manipulate this bacteria. For instance, I had written that Jack Parsons, when he blew himself up supposedly, had made a homunculus, and that's how his lab blew up. A homunculus is a little creature that's grown in a test tube. He's a man. Well, it looks like a little gray, I guess. But anyway, he knows all the secrets, or many of the secrets of the universe, just like a golem.
Who did this, Jack Parsons?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he made a homunculus, probably under the instructions of Aleister Crowley. Because that lamb, that's what that lamb thing is, that he drew. But in any case...
So he actually created a little creature?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know this. Okay.
Yeah, a famous journalist had pretty much proved the case for it, that this is what he was doing in his lab when it blew up. But a homunculus is not created by the alchemist. A homunculus is grown from a germ. It's always there. The little creature is always there. You just grow it so it's big enough to talk and communicate with you. I think what they're talking about is in code, in alchemy, a lot of it has to do with the engineering of these bacteria, this bacteria.
Jack, what about the 1918 flu pandemic, the Spanish flu? I mean,
they dumped out all their vaccines with that. They wanted to use up those vaccines, and everybody who got that vaccines ended up getting that flu.
Because I was reading Wikipedia, right? So I just pulled it up. Let me read it, and you tell me if this sounds like just a big pile of bullshit.
It's Wikipedia. It probably is a big pile of bullshit, you know?
It says the 1918 flu pandemic from January 1918 to December 1920 was an unusually deadly influenza pandemic. The first of the two pandemics involved, now get a load of this, H1N1 influenza virus. So, you know, here we go with trying to, in my view, correlate recent H1N1 pandemic fears and
right.
linking it back to the 1918 flu pandemic. In fact, they're not even calling it the Spanish flu anymore. They're calling it the 1918 flu pandemic. So they actually changed the wording.
And Morgan Freeman's going to do a special on it next week.
It's unbelievable. Now that I'm reading this, it's unbelievable. And they're saying that 500 million people across the world, including remote Pacific islands and the Arctic, were infected, and it resulted in the deaths of 50 to 100 million. I always try to figure out how it is they get a range of 50 to 100 million. That never made sense to me, how they just really can't nail that down. Anyway, I digressed there on you a little bit, but it just seems to be, as you're taking me through this.
And then you got the fools watching the Discovery and the National Geographic Channel and saying, oh, yeah, wow, I learned something today. Huh?
Oh, my God. What a bunch of nonsense. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to digress.
That coincided with the creation of the Aberdeen Proving Grounds. That virus, that's what they're calling it. As I said, I'm not so sure outside of bacteriophages that viruses really exist. Maybe bacteriophages is a virus that infects bacteria, by the way.
So are they infecting people through spraying and aerosols? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah.
Is that their primary
Michael,
way of...
I produced a patch for the Deseret test zone, which is where they were orchestrating the whole thing for like 10 years.
Right, right.
Between 62 and late 72. And it shows the Earth encircled in a cloud of gas. I'm watching some guy on TV the other day talking like he's a scientist, talking about these vapor trails, these contrails of vapor trails from planes. Are we ignoring the fact that this happened, okay? They sprayed us all with these things for 10 years, okay? They had a little patch that showed the Earth being encircled in a cloud of this stuff. And then you got people talking about, no, they wouldn't do that. Why are these people even allowed on TV anymore? I don't understand.
Well, going back to you had mentioned that video that I had posted up on my other YouTube channel, and it was a declassified Department of Defense video going back to 1952, and the name of the declassified video was Naval Concepts of Chemical and Biological Warfare. And in that video, because I know you remember the video because you watched it, and I think you sourced it.
Oh, it's in my post. It's one of the links.
They clearly.
I urge everybody who reads that post, please look at that film too.
And I'm going to put it in the show notes for this.
It needs to be watched to actually be believed.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, because
otherwise you're going to think I'm exaggerating.
Well, that's exactly right. That's why I bring it up, because people are going to think that you and I are out to lunch. When, if you watch that film, you're going to see back in 1952, they're spraying everybody, and they're explaining in this Department of Defense video that how aerosol spraying can be an extreme benefit
militarily. We need a bigger spray mechanism.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they did. Later on, they took C-130s from the Air Force, and they used those to spray the heartland of America over and over again. They were running nonstop flights over America, spraying it with the fluorescent tracer particles, feeding their little pets, you know?
Everything you're talking about now, it's going to lead into the, right, it's culminating to this, And I know you know the question that's coming, but we have this covert aerosol chemtrail program in place. I mean, you can look at the sky at any given day.
It could be now that they have to spray, they have to keep spraying. And this is my theory. I think if they stop, we're all bad. It's like they opened up Pandora's box. I think they're trying to contain it now. You know. Once you go past a certain point, we can't go back.
So you're saying that this spraying could possibly be them having to do it in order to keep the population from
dropping dead
at
a rate of $5 billion out of $7 billion. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you a little story, and this will be real quick because you're the guest and I'm the host, and you're supposed to be talking, not me. But let me tell you about the story going back to the 2012. I was out in San Francisco, and I was taking a course, and I'm just going to let the course remain nameless. And there was a gentleman that was taking the course with me, and it was probably two dozen of us in the room. And he was an older guy. He was about 65 years old. And I remember during the middle of the week, it was after the class, and he'd come over to me and he started talking to me. And then he says to me that he was retired from the NSA. So I said, okay. And I found it interesting to begin with that he just fired up a conversation with me. So a little voice in my head is telling me that maybe he knows a little bit more about what I'm involved in than he's letting on, right? But
oh, I guarantee he did.
So anyway, he sits down next to me. He was very nice. So I started talking to him, and I told him at the time, I wasn't doing the radio shows, but I had the blog going full steam ahead. And I said, well, I have a couple of questions if you wouldn't mind answering them. And he said to me, well, I can answer what I can. So I asked him a couple of questions, and we got to the aerosol spray. We got to the chemtrails. And I said to him, so there's a lot of people that don't believe that we're being sprayed. And Jack, I'm not kidding you, he started laughing.
Michael, it's laughable. In light of what I've just put on the internet, this is all documented. This isn't one of your standard internet posts with no citations. I use practically only government sources too. You know? This is all documented. What are you talking about? There's no spraying program. You know? What else are you going to tell me next? The Peter Pan flew into your room this morning? These people are beyond stupid. That's why I keep saying it's got to be some kind of pathogen. It's got to be.
Well, he had said to me, I said to him, oh, why are they spraying? What's the purpose of the spraying? And this is what he said. He didn't say to block the sun. He didn't say for military purposes with regard to ionizing the atmosphere for communications and stuff like that. I'm not saying that that is not one of the reasons why, but what he told me was that they are, quote unquote, checking dispersal rates. And then I said, checking dispersal rates for what? And then he said to me, for biological purposes. This is what he told me. And he also went a step further and he said to me that they are able to affect certain populations based upon manipulating the DNA through these aerosols.
That's what these things do. They can program them to manipulate the DNA any way they want.
And people think this is wild ass science fiction. And that, like I said before, that you and I are crazy. But you know what? I didn't know this guy. And
let me tell you something. Let me just say this. Watch John Carpenter's The Thing and watch Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Right, right.
Those were not just movies. Those were warnings, you know, for those who know.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly the way it works. And I think a lot of the people running around, I once sat on the beach, and it was a few years ago. It was about 10, 15 years ago. And I watched a line of black helicopters flying over Fire Island. And it was four of them, and they had some kind of thing sticking out the tip of the helicopter like an antenna. They looked like unicorn helicopters, black helicopters. And they were flying only 200 feet, 300 feet up over a crowded beach. It was one of those, you know, hot July Sundays
where
the beach is packed, you know, you could smell suntan oil. And everybody's looking up, and the racket was so loud, they were flying, so you could feel the wash from the rotor blades. And they just flew slow as a helicopter can fly over this whole crowd. And I said to myself, they are examining these people for something. I think they're looking to see who is still human and who isn't anymore, because I think they have actually created that. And I've been in communication with some people from Nexus and stuff like that, and that's where they're going with all this. I said, they're checking these people. It was so obvious. It was so obvious. They are checking these people for something.
Well, it's even, Jack, like, you know, when you take a look around, there's a new cell phone tower that goes up like every 6.5 minutes, right?
Yeah, right. And I believe those are cell phone towers.
They're not cell phone towers. I mean, when you think about it, how much improved is your cell phone reception from 10 years ago? I'm going to tell you from my own experience, not a lot, if any. I mean, I have the same type of reception, maybe a little better. So something's going on. And the other thing is, you never actually see these things go up. I don't know. I don't know when they go up.
No, I never thought of that, Michael. But you know, you don't see them going up, do you?
You know, you just wake up one morning and it's up. So they're doing these things probably in the middle of the night sometime, and, you know, they're getting them up real fast. I take a look around, Jack, and these things are pervasive. They are all over the place. And it's not because they want you and I to have clear phone calls. That's a bunch of bullshit.
No, they can control these bacteria with microwaves.
Right, frequencies, yep.
Frequencies, yeah. Phil Ward got into the research on that, and there's a woman named Royal on Hill. There was a call. They did a lot of research on this, and it's my belief that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I really think that they've opened up Pandora's box, and they're probably trying to keep a lid on it as much as they can.
That's an interesting take, though. That's a very interesting take. I have to be honest with you. I haven't really heard that one before, that it's kind of like a oops.
Yeah, yeah. Let's try to cover this up so the whole world don't die and people won't start asking questions, you know? Because you know what? They're as guilty as sin. What really, like, gets me is I hear all this stuff about Hitler all the time. Of course, we have the nonsense you see on TV making him out to be a madman. And now we have the new thing, which I know a bunch of disinformationists are pushing. That Hitler was a British agent, an operative. How come Hitler was the only world leader at the time that had enough sense to say, "This is, we can't do this," you know? He had actually banned this stuff in the Third Reich.
Yeah.
Now, they had to do it behind his back.
Yeah.
Why did any other world leader do this? You know?
Well, I'm gonna say that for anybody who wants to get some information on a revisionist view of the National Socialists, of Hitler, of Germany during World War II, that they should go listen to the interviews I did with Deanna Spingola.
Yeah, she's good. I like her.
I love Deanna, and she's well-researched, and those shows will give a perspective on Germany during World War II.
Germany was not the aggressor in either one of those wars.
No, I mean, look, if you listen to his speeches, if you take the time to listen to his speeches, and more of his speeches now are making their way onto the internet, onto YouTube, and listen to what Adolf Hitler is saying. If you listen and you listen with an open mind.
He was speaking for all of us, too. He wasn't just speaking for the German people. He was speaking for the whole human race.
And I know a lot of people are going to be, we're going to get hate mail and be saying what
we're
saying.
Of course, on both sides, too, because the neo-Nazis, they think Hitler was a traitor, and the Jews, they think he was the devil. You know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he was neither. Read his book. Oh, that's all I could say. Read it.
Yeah, Mein Kampf. Yep.
Mein Kampf. Right.
Yeah, and what I tell people is, look, just remember that the world we have today is because we won the war, that the Allies, so-called Allies, won the war. And this is 70 years later.
We lost the war when the Allies won the war, you know, really won was the people they call the black nobility. They won the war.
Well, this has been very interesting, Jack, and I'm really glad that you came back on the show. Our listeners can get your articles and your information.
Hey, let me just do this, Michael.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me give you this one. It's on the last part. I'll give you like the kicker.
Okay.
Okay? I'll give you the kicker on the Sarassia Marcescens. The next one's going to create a furor. If it even gets published anywhere where it's going to get read. But I think Nexus loves these.
So what's coming up with the next article?
Okay, listen to this now. The most commonly used sacred name of Yahweh in both Judaism and Christianity is I Am That I Am. In Hebrew, it's Yeh Asha Ihi. Usually just shortened to Ihi or I Am. Ihi Asha Ihi literally translates as I will be what I will be. And that's perhaps a blood-red gelatinous mass when placed upon food. Because the original name of Sarassia Marcescens that we have managed to trace from reading an old Jewish manual from 1904 on this stuff, it doesn't even say this in any of the Wikipedia or any of the popular entries. That's where I got this from. I sourced it on the last one. But Sarassia Marcescens was originally named by an Italian doctor, Vincenzo Sett, and he gave it what the Jews said is a strange name of Zeo Galactica Immunotropa. It means I live. I live when I am placed upon food, or I am placed upon food.
Mm.
I live. Same thing almost.
And the
You
food
know?
would be what? Humans?
No. This is about it grows as a gelatinous red mass on breads and different dairy products.
Okay.
But it's almost the same as I am that I am. You know, and this is the stuff they've been using. And nobody knows why he named it this. There's a when you go into the nomenclature of these things, they seem to have known more about them when they first started using them. Than, they quickly took that name down.
So it's in sources that are not mainstream.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Jewish Encyclopedia, unedited full text of the 1906 Jewish Encyclopedia. That's how I found that. And they've pretty much written it out of history.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of information in the old Jewish encyclopedias that has amazingly disappeared.
I know.
Very interesting.
Well, the Jews do a lot of things, but nobody's ever going to accuse them of being fools, you know?
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. So,
We're
Jack, where
fools.
can people read more about your articles? Where can they go?
Well, Nexus is publishing this one. It will be in the next issue. At least they're publishing it in two parts. It's long. These articles are one is 7,700 words, and the next one's going to be about 9,000 words. They're in Veterans Today, and they're all over the internet already. People have taken them, copied them.
And you have your blog?
Right, and my blog, where I'm answering comments, or I was trying to answer them until they commandeered it. They won't even let me comment on my own blog. I believe we regained control of that situation. But, you know, I'm not out to, like, hurt anybody or to... I'm not a radical, you know. I don't see what good that does. So I don't know why anybody would want to shut me up, to tell you the truth. I'm only trying to help. Let's put it that way. And
yeah,
if we
well,
don't take a good look at this, it's going to kill us all. I mean, maybe they think they can contain it, but I don't think they can contain
yeah.
it. And I keep telling them, you know, the more people that read this, the better. Because you know what? So it's gonna end up getting solved, and you know you can't put this on your radio. It's gonna end up getting solved by some kid in bumfuck China playing with a microscope, you know. And unless he gets the information, he's not gonna be able to solve it.
Yeah.
I want this to go out to everybody. And that's why I wrote it. I spent 6 months. When's the last time? It's been 5 months now. I've been working on this, and that's what I want everybody to read this.
Well, most people are. If they even try to read it, not going to get it. And, you know, and most people are watching Dukes of Hazzard reruns, you know? So,
well, you know what? When they stop bleeding out through every orifice of their body, they can call the Duke. They can call Daisy Duke, okay?
Yeah. And maybe they'll wake up.
Why? Yeah. You know, why their children just died in a day.
It feels
this
like you're shoveling
a critical situation. It doesn't get any more critical than this.
Yeah.
Like I said, 80% of the world is carrying this stuff. And we didn't even get into the mycoplasma yet, which is these things mutate the gene pool, too. We are creating a race of zombies. And all one needs to do is walk into the nearest Walmart and take a look around and see.
Well, the next time you come back on the show, we could pick up where we left off and we could talk about that.
Okay. Yeah. The second one is like, that's where I get into the sciences.
And that concludes another Sage of Quay interview, and I hope you enjoyed the discussion as much as I did. Links to my guests' websites and social media are listed in the show notes below. And as always, I'd like to thank everyone for listening and visiting the blog. You can get to the blog by typing in sageofquayradio.blogspot.com or simply head over to our hub website at sageofquay.com. Also, if you get a moment, please visit laborofloveMusic.com to listen to my album, Leaving Dystopia. And remember, live in truth and always serve creation. It's really that simple. See everyone next week. Be safe, enjoy, and God bless.